Welcome, everyone. This is Tennyson Wolfe speaking, and you have joined into the Human to Human podcast, where I love to gather with some of my friends and acquaintances and people that I'm meeting just fresh and new, and some people that I've known over multiple years. We seem to share some hunger for navigating some of the deeper patterns of life and for exploring lots of connections, including how we work, how we be community with one another, some of those kinds of things. There's such a range of topics to follow. I think of Human to Human, the podcast, as a place to have some conversations, not in the short form, it's not bullet points, but instead in a little bit of a longer form that welcomes us to be in a bit of story, and all with the desire to lift up this quality of being more deeply human in ourselves and with others and in the circumstances we live in. Well, it's good to do that with guests and friends and loved ones. And I'm going to talk a little bit about my guest before welcoming her voice in today. It's Miriam Hadnies. And from Amsterdam, and someone that we've known of each other for probably a couple of years now, that began, I think, with an invitation to join her podcast. She does wonderful work on workshops work, and there's some other things that we'll explore with one another. But Miriam is a person that I think a common element every time that she and I have talked, it kind of is in Zoom style, has arisen out of some joy and some delight. I feel that in my heart as I welcome Miriam onto the show. Miriam, hello and welcome. Thank you for joining.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, Tennyson. And I'm delighted to have switched roles this time after you've been on the podcast, I think, two or three times now.
That's right. Yeah, at least two. I'm trying to think of the third. But if we don't have a third, let's make a third. How does that sound? Hey, listen, Miriam, I'd like to welcome a little bit of your voice in the helloing way that we do. And as is pattern for this podcast, I deliberately don't do a big pre-hello because I love the freshness of the hello in the moment. So I'd welcome the hello that you wish to say here, a little bit of who you are and how it feels to be joining in here, how you are in your day, and any of those kinds of things. What's a little bit of what it's like to be you right now, Miriam?
Wow. It's a big question. Where to start?
I kind of stacked a few things on there.
What is it to be me today?
Yeah.
I think today is actually a good day because I started with a wonderful workshop for client work on the topic of psychological safety, which is very close to my heart. And it's for a large client, and they're on the mission to educate their 100,000 staff members on what it means to create psychological safety for ourselves and each other. So that's something that sparks joy. And then to recover from that, I spent 2 hours on my balcony to prepare for spring and to pot and repot plants and to get the hands dirty and the feet dirty and then to sit there and just enjoy the new view. I think that's these few things of instant gratification to do something with our hands. Get a bit dirty and then just enjoy it.
Oh gosh.
And yeah, before joining you on this call, I was working on my next big project, which feels very scary and very vulnerable. I'm developing my own course. And it's very funny that I feel myself confronted with very deep, maybe fears too big of a word, but doubts and thoughts that I only remember from my time back as a PhD student, when I was confronted to the limitations of my own intellect. And suddenly there it is, this big imposter syndrome coming back, sneaking in.
Oh gosh, yeah.
So that's me today.
That is a lot, Miriam, and that makes me want to follow a lot of things in there. And my excitement as I just clap my hands together, that's a clap of joy or a clap of appreciation. Because I think it's one of the things that I quite love in connection with you. There is a certain pattern or disposition to go towards these things that are both big and, quote, small in our lives, integrate them together, and follow the aliveness of them, be it the doubts and the fears of the next big project or, you know, the joy of the dirt in the fingers for pots on the, you know, on the balcony or on the, you know, in our home, near our homes. So there's lots to follow in all of that. You've named some big stuff. Let's go back into some of that. Psychological safety for a group of 100,000. Whoa. Can you headline a little of what that means and maybe how that feels in your own body? That, excuse me, that's no small project. That's no small undertaking. Whew.
It's a beautiful project that obviously I cannot do alone. Mm. So I am working with a team, I think, of 15 other facilitators, mm-hmm. because we delivered the workshop in 13, maybe 10 different languages. Mm. And what... I think so. What I appreciate in the client is that they see that today's challenges as a company that of that size can only happen when every employee feels the responsibility to speak up, to ask questions, to point out what is not working. And this starts with, or this means psychological safety, feeling safe enough to do all of that. Mm. And what I love in the project is that it reminds me that what we do with facilitation is basically creating psychological safety,
yeah.
more than anything else.
Yeah.
So it's a joy to create the space for people who are not used to, I would say, air quotes, our way of facilitation.
Mm-hmm.
So they go in meetings, they have these corporate meetings, maybe they go to corporate trainings. And I feel very blessed that we won this project because it's different. We are not a big consulting company that gives them the training and tries to kill them with a set of PowerPoint slides. Mm. But it's based on the assumption that we can only create psychological safety for others if we feel it for ourselves.
Ooh, yeah.
Right? I think if, and I always think of these moments where I tend to snap at someone. Yeah. We're human, it helps. And this happens if I don't feel secure, if I don't feel grounded, if I don't feel confident, then someone asks me a question. And there comes imposter protecting me.
Yeah.
Like, this question is not relevant. Why do you ask that? Yeah. Don't you trust me? Although if I'm grounded and self-confident and I know what I'm doing, then someone asks a question, challenge me. I'm like, thank you. Mm. Tell me more about that. Mm. I'm curious to hear. What if you are right and I'm wrong? Mm. So that's a totally different way of communicating with each other and dealing with challenges.
Mm-hmm. I like the way that when you're talking about the protective imposter syndrome, that you just put your fists up like in this little, you know, boxing kind of way or fighting kind of way. And I relate to that also. Like that, that's some of the depth, Miriam, I think, of being a human being. I like to think of myself as one who's thought through, excuse me, has thought through a lot of things and, you know, learned a few things and learned how to ground. And all of that. But boy, there are times when I can just feel like my fists are up also. And I'm, you know, I'm not ready to accept whatever that insecurity is in myself or that unresolved thing in myself. And I want to I want to blame it on someone else on in the external world. So just in the realm of psychological safety. And I like the way that you just framed that. Like, you know, that's a big topic. You could say a lot about all of that. But even just to bring it down to a certain level of a certain kind of feeling of acceptance, to be able to ask questions of one another, whether it's the, you know, I don't understand what's going on here, obvious stuff, or the nuance, like, wait a minute, there might be a little bit more mystery here, or the painful questions also, like, why is this, you know, what's really going on here? So just loving that, I relate so much. And I think it's part of the conversation you and I have had over a few times here, that there is something to be said for just showing up. And we're inviting people, those of us who are facilitators of this format, you know, we're so often inviting people, encouraging them to show up, bring your whole self into the room. Well, it turns out we better darn well be bringing our whole selves into the room also. You know, that's not a strategic step. It's an energetic attraction or reality, you know?
Yeah. And that's at the core of our work. And I don't know how it's for you, every time that I hear a facilitator host say, you are safe to, you are here in a safe space. You can be who you are. And like, it's not about saying that. It's about creating that. And I think if you create it, then it doesn't even need to be said. And it, yeah, as you say, it starts with how we show up. And I think it's a big step. if you still fight the inner demons, I think that's just the proof that we never arrived. We're all human, and it just continues to be there. And I think the awareness of it and the acceptance,
that's
admitting our fallibility.
Yeah, that's good. I had a recent experience of that in this format of talking with one another. It's like fun to share stories, Miriam. So there's a little of this and a little of that. But just yesterday, I was in some writing, and I had done an exciting part of that writing, which for me was, oh, let's pop some ideas out. And I've got flip charts on the wall and multicolored post-it notes and what I thought would be maybe 15 to 20 little post-it note topic areas became like 100 because I let my brain just follow it and my heart just follow it, right? And I was feeling really good about that. And then I came back to pick it up as another layer of writing and just hit the wall. And I was so frustrated and like mad at myself and pouty. And, you know, I think I was just holding my fists up in front of the mirror and finally said, all right, I got to go for a walk. Took the walk. Yay. And then everything changed. You know, it was kind of like, well, I think I better pot the plants now. And for me, it was take a little bit of a walk, and it interrupted all of that bizarro sequence, you know, that I think many of us have, including that's, I would connect it into, you know, wow, new big project, creating my own course. I imagine in you some excitement and spark of yes. And then also like, oh, geez, who am I to do this? That fear and doubt that you're naming. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And self-sabotage, my little self-sabotage friend waiting behind every corner to just sneak in.
What is your favorite appearance? No, your most common appearance of that self-sabotager? Like it's, I think I better go fold the laundry again.
Yes, either that or making it complex for other people to sign up. So for instance, having not a button with sign up here, but first click here, then find the button to sign up for the waiting list. Mm. And then once you receive the email, then maybe potentially I give you more information.
Right. Yeah. Right. As
And
opposed
then
to just one click.
it's not on me. Oh, nobody wanted it.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, I did everything I could, but nobody wanted it. So now I have to do something else.
Oh, gosh, that's good. Hey, Miriam. Oh, keep going. Go ahead.
And a hell yes to the magic of a walk.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
I realize every time that I feel overwhelmed and too excited.
Yeah.
Or stressed because there's so much to do.
Yeah.
If I take a break and I go for a walk and I come back, I'm like, oh, it's actually not that much.
Right. Yeah, it's a primo regulator for me. Yeah. Like if I speak at the level of nervous system and my own nervous system in relation to some of those projects or writing or things to do or navigating life sometimes, right? That I've come to use more of that language, actually. I feel dysregulated in my nervous system and really need some regulation. And that regulation or regrounding comes from the simplest of things. Sometimes it is a walk, it is a potted plant, it is a nap, it is a cup of tea, you know?
Yeah. And as you spoke, I was just wondering the connection between how we treat our minds and how we treat our bodies.
Oh, gosh.
And I run my second half marathon about a week ago.
Yeah.
And it was exhausting, and I hit a wall.
Yeah.
But I finished it.
Yeah.
And then I was forced to take a week break. My body just told me, you have to take a break. Because beforehand, I was overtraining, I didn't stretch enough, all these beginner mistakes. And while listening to you, I wonder, what is the equivalent to our mind? So are we doing enough stretching? Are we taking enough breaks? Are we taking good care?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a great question. Way to go, you know, first of all. And it's a question that I relate to in your story today. Yeah, I am an incessant hunter, that might be a little too aggressive, curious person about these. I think, I don't know, life connecting and life giving practices. I look for the principles, you know, and I look for the practice, and then I get excited and try them and encourage them with others, you know, and then sometimes move on, and some of them stick though. But with what I'm hearing and appreciating in you is two examples, the half marathon, and then your body says, I need time, whatever that voice is that's coming from your body. But the reality of, you don't just run the marathon and then get on with whatever is the next. It's like not just your physical knees and ankles and feet need some rest and some water and you know, some other things, but it's some space or some breath. So I can hear that in that example. And I hear it in the example that you named earlier, the client work, psychological safety, did this big thing. And then I'm not ready to jump into the next thing. That's what I'm hearing in your voice, right? Not ready to just jump into the next thing. I need a couple of hours, or that's what it turned out to be, of something different. And in this case, dirt and plants and flowers and maybe a tomato or whatever it is you put into your pots. That's like an honoring of, what is that? Like, it feels like an honoring of dwelling in the moment and in the reality of, that was a big thing, whether it's a relative big thing, you know, or just that your body or your spirit even is telling you a little space. When I find myself writing in the smallest of ways, I'm talking about blogs now, blog posts, because that's a regular thing for me. And quite often I'll do the, you know, I don't know what I'm going to write usually when I sit down, and then I give it some attention and try to let it come through me. And when you get to the point of click publish send, I find that I want another 5 minutes now of just sitting quietly, like not just spaciousness on the beginning, get the task done and then move on. There's something kind, it feels like. Oh gosh, what is that? Just to weave in a pattern of breath or spaciousness. Mm. Well, I'm learning out loud just as I say that with you.
I love that. And I think I wonder whether it also has to do with just acknowledging, respecting, appreciating ourselves.
Oh yeah.
Because it's so easy to, and I saw myself, so the first half marathon I did, I was so excited that I overtrained, but it was, I finished it and I was like, what? That's it?
Mm-hmm.
I could run longer. Mm-hmm. And the next day I was out and running again. And I realized that I haven't taken the moment to actually appreciate and celebrate this win.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was always only a half marathon. Everyone can do that. Now I'm ready for the full.
Right.
And so I'm kind of, although I'm not masochistic, but I was kind of glad that my body put everything back into perspective to remind me that, no, Miriam, 21 point whatever, 3 kilometers is not normal to run.
Right.
And yeah, taking these breaks also after writing a blog post so regularly, bringing your thoughts to the world, bring them to words and providing value, it's not a given.
Yeah.
And I think we forget that if we just rush to the next thing.
I think so. Like, do you find with your garden that now with those pots planted, well, it's all fresh. It was today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you find yourself kind of excited to go sit near those pots? Yeah.
I am. So 2 weeks ago, I prepared the balcony. So I cleaned it.
Yeah.
And I removed all the old plants. And it was literally every half hour, I just walked out on the balcony just to look at it and appreciate it because I was so proud.
Right. To say hello to it again, yes. Right? A little extra hello.
You're still there. It's still clean.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's like part of the celebration to me, whether it's the clean balcony or the pots planted. In my version, it's out through the back door that you can see behind me. And there's a little garden space back there. And I you know, have both some flowers and some kale planted in a pot. And, you know, there's extra joy to just go look and say, hey, look at that kale growing again, you know? So I think that is celebration, though. And maybe the point of all of this is, gosh, let's not forget to bake in celebration, whether it's the celebration of pause or look how beautiful it looks, or, you know, hey, wasn't it great to get my hands in the dirt, that kind of stuff. But baking in more of a celebratory honoring or tone that just honors our bodies and our being. That it feels like that's woven in there.
Yeah.
Miriam, once upon a time you did a PhD program. Will you say what was it in? What studies did you come from?
I came from economics.
Yeah.
And was initially interested in development economics for my master's. And then moved into behavioral economics for the PhD. And it was the impact of culture, religion, and family on economic decision-making in sub-Saharan Africa.
There you go.
Yeah. And believe it or not, about planting seeds and celebrating, I did a research project in 2014 in Burkina Faso on something we called forced solidarity. So the pressure of family and kin to pay back once someone is successful in their business and to support them. 2014, we did the research, and last week the paper got published.
Nice.
20 years.
Give it time. Give it time. Give it time. The learning is there.
Not that it's of any value for me personally nowadays. So yeah, all the congratulations and respect to my co-author who really had the stamina.
Right.
But it was funny to observe that sometimes things take a lot of time.
Yeah. That is a potent learning. You know how some of us have learnings that kind of loop around, like it's showing up here and then it goes away, or we reject it. I reject it, you know, and then it comes back and then it goes away again and then it comes back. What you've just named is one of those for me. Things take time. And it sounds so silly to say it that way, but that's almost the enunciation that I need to remember something so basic and simple. Things take time. Because something in me, you know, still feels like, oh gosh, the more I can rush, the faster I can do things, the better I must be. And there's such an important interruption of that narrative, you know. You relate to that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Funny enough, it's similar to what we pointed out earlier. When we feel rushed and stressed, taking a break, pausing, going for a walk is all the difference. And I think very often this is the case. If we slow down, if we pay attention, if we're mindful of what we want to achieve and why we're doing things, they usually go a longer way.
Yeah.
And still, it's so simple and so difficult.
Right there. I relate to that. Miriam, we did meet, or part of our meeting is in the context of your podcast, Workshops Work, Making Workshops Work. And maybe that's evolved a little bit in title. And we also got to connect around a gathering, a festival that you were creating. Never Done, the Never Done Before Festival. Makes me smile, actually, to think of some of our earlier conversations when that was more in an incubatory state, incubating, just starting. I bet, no, let's try this. What's the state of things for you now in those threads of your creations or co-creations? And I bet there's some pretty important themes that have grown out of those. You're kind of a go-to person right now to say, so what have you learned about what makes workshops work?
Yeah, thank you. I think this week I'm publishing episode 218. And thank you. And when I started, I thought that after 5, maybe 20 episodes, I'll be done, because how much can you speak about workshops and facilitation?
Is that a lot, right?
It is a lot, and I'm still learning. I think everything I know, I learned from the podcast and my guests.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting when I hear some listeners reflect on the episodes they just listened to, and they started with episode 1. I realized that back then I didn't really understand what facilitation was. I was curious about the activities. And one of my questions was always, so how do you do that?
Right, right.
So explain, how do you do that? And what do you say? And what activity do you use? And what framework? And now the conversations are much more on the meta level. So last week I published an episode with Sean Blair, and for 90 minutes we reflected on what does it mean to be present?
Yeah.
And do we have to be loud to be present? And how can we be silent when being present? And what makes the difference, and what's the impact on the group? So it's less about the how we're doing things, but rather the why we're doing things. It's more about the mindset, the inner journey, facilitation. So I think that's definitely something that I've learned, that facilitation is all about the personal growth, because we, psychological safety and this inner calmness. Only if we are grounded, we can hold the space for others, literally, like a tree. If we have strong roots, then we can stand in the fire and the storm for the group.
Yeah, definitely. So I relate to that one. And sometimes, like, I think what I want to encourage both with myself and with others, the others that I get to encourage in their facilitating lives, you know, people are learning, we're all learning. But it's the just be working on your grounding. You don't have to be perfect at something here. But having a relationship with your own grounding journey or your own presence journey tends to carry some weight in the room. So, you know, it might not look like, well, jeepers, there's, you know, there's the perfectly grounded facilitator, but I think you can feel when somebody appreciates it and is in their own path of learning, because then you get to invite other people into their paths of learning or our shared paths of learning. Yeah, there's something potent about
that. This brings Juanita to my mind, and she said on the podcast, you cannot bring people somewhere where you haven't been before.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good Juanita line. And practice.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And then never done before actually was born out of the observation that I had all these genius facilitators on the podcast who shared creativity ideas with me. And yet when they were facilitating for clients, there was none of those creativity, or very little, a very small portion of this creativity that could materialize. And whenever I went to conferences, I was underwhelmed by the newness and the creativity and maybe the quirkiness of what was shown. So I back then reached out to my podcast guests, and you were one of the very first I contacted. And I said, I have this crazy idea. I want to invite you to a festival and I want you to host a workshop. And the only condition is that you have to do something you've never done before.
I love that.
And it's still what we do.
Yeah.
And it creates a beautiful space of learning and humility.
Oh, yeah.
Where if you're presenting something for the first time that you have never done before to a group of colleagues, then by definition, everyone is learning and there's no expert. Right. Because if it's the first time you're doing it, you cannot be an expert yet. And I think back then I wasn't aware of the impact of this framing. But it's, that's what we do. And we are now a community of just over 100 from 42 countries.
That's phenomenally good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love the creation that goes from like, here's a nutty idea. Let's do this. Gather a few friends. See if you can breathe some shared life into it or experience a shared breath in it. And then it grows into things. Like there's something in that that I feel so compelled by. And yours is one example, or that is one example in your story, Miriam. You just start. Try something. And see what sticks, or see what continues to have life. You know, that feels pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I maybe learned in my academic life of just try crazy ideas, have an hypothesis and see what works and what doesn't.
Right.
And I back then I quit my university job because it felt too small to me. It was like playing by the rules and sticking to a certain format.
Yeah.
And I had so many ideas that I just wanted to try out, which then went maybe a little bit in the other extreme,
Right.
having no boundaries because I started as a freelancer. Every
Right.
day I had a new idea what I want to do.
But it grows, right? Like that's back to me, that's back to the garden or the pots.
Yes.
We'll plant something and some of them grow really well and, you know, even come back next year, or we come back to them next year and some of them are like, no, that one didn't work. The
Yeah.
birds got that one.
And sometimes you plan something and you totally forget, and 20 years later, there's oops, oh, what am I doing with this one now?
There it is.
Yeah. And I
Miriam,
think, sorry.
go ahead.
I think that's the beauty of our community. And what I mean by our community is the global community of those who self-identify as facilitators. That when we're in a conversation with each other, there's always something that emerges, an idea, a thread, an insight. Because it's an environment that is so generous in sharing and exploring.
You know, I appreciate hearing that with you. It may have been something that came out in one of our earlier conversations, even the podcasts, because there's this phrase that has been important to me, follow the spark of yes. And I realize it's one of the compelling guidance structures that I find super useful and really enjoy also. So in our conversation, you know, there is a little bit of like it's not a scripted thing. You didn't get any preset questions, and nor did I really write them down that way. But by just starting, and in what I heard in your voice too, showing up with a certain generosity, and that's generosity with the context, you know, with the environment, with the people, and it's a certain generosity with self, or maybe generosity with life also. Sparks of yes tend to show up in that. Like that's a phenomenal way of being, whether we're working on 100,000 people with psychological safety, creating our own curriculums, or trying out a crazy little three sequence gathering online with a few people to begin to explore a thing. Yeah, that's I love the spark of yes part of that. And again, in the spirit of looped learning, oh gosh, I learned that one, I follow it, and then kind of forget it a little bit, and then come back even stronger, you know.
Yeah. And thank you. And I want to also acknowledge the relevance of setting the stage or creating the framework. Because the way how you introduced our conversation, how you created a space that felt safe for me, and when you're okay, this is why we're here, and this is what you're expecting or hoping from this conversation. It's human, it's grounded, it's explorative, it's a small-ish audience, although we never know. And then it helped me to also find my maybe voice or presence in this conversation.
I'm glad. Yeah, I really like that. I imagine, Miriam, that over the years here, as you've been doing many things and integrating who you are in those things, or who you are as groups of people in those things, there's been some inner change in you, how you yourself have grown. You've spoken some of that in earlier words there. Can you highlight a little of how have you, in all of this great focus on making workshops work and other things, how has your inner being changed?
Wow. Beautiful question. And it reminds me of, I think it was just last week, I had this inner salto, this jump, like, oh, I did something that I wasn't able to do last year. And by that, I don't mean running faster, jumping higher. I mean a mindset. And so what I observed last week, and I think I had another one the week before, was around my money mindset, which is very important as an entrepreneur. And I came from academia. I never left academia before starting my own thing, first as a freelancer and then as a business owner. And I came in my background, my knowledge was a public good. There is no price tag to my knowledge. So of course I'm sharing my knowledge, but at some point I have to make money, and then to ask for money, to price that, to enroll others in that, to charge and not to feel bad. This was a journey.
Yeah.
And it was just like last week, the last 2 or 3 weeks, that I had these moments where I'm like, oh, I reached out to my newsletter, my followers, and saying, I'm building this course and I think you might be interested in joining. Something I wouldn't have dared before, because I thought that selling is somehow dirty. And now I appreciate and acknowledge that, no, there are people out there who would like to learn from me, and they would like to pay for it.
Yeah.
And that's a mindset shift that is so significant that I could observe myself. I'm like, oh, tap on the shoulder. So that's one. And I think in general, the way how I listen and I'm present, and the way how I catch myself, just this inch of self-awareness. I came back from a family holiday, and every family has their dynamics. I love my family when they're far. So we spend a week together. And I came back and sat the dinner table with my partner and a friend. And suddenly she said something, I snapped. I'm like, whew. And it took me a millisecond to apologize and say, I'm so sorry. I was still in this family dynamic, family system. I was the small sister, the daughter.
Right.
Whoever.
All the old things.
And this is not the way how we communicated here in my house. Yeah. And that was very interesting to also observe, like, oh, there's a difference and I need some time to reintegrate. And I did observe that this behavior wasn't okay. And I could also see where it comes from. And I think that's a level of self-awareness that I didn't have a couple of years ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago.
That's right. Miriam, if you think to people who are listening, who might range from people who are very committed to their facilitating practices and so forth, and some who are really just trying to find an added nuanced depth within themselves as human beings, and all of that blends together to me. That's the connecting point. Is there an essence of encouragement that you would like to offer?
Yes. I think we're all facilitators. We do it, I think, so intrinsically. When we hosted a dinner for family or friends, we think of what we serve them, the music, whom to invite, how to lead a conversation. That's all somehow facilitation. If we think how we can help our children to be more successful in school, to find more joy in doing their homework, we're facilitating. So I think if it's about encouragement, then thinking of all these moments where we make it easy for others to come together as humans to collaborate, to exchange, to learn from each other. And if it's about one thing everyone can do to deepen the practice, to ask follow-up questions. I think that's one of the learnings. I don't remember who said that, and I love it, and it's so true. Asking a good question is great, and you will hear something. Asking a follow-up question shows that you're listening, that you're curious, that you want more, that you're interested, and you will see the difference on the face of your peer or partner, how they light up because they feel seen.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I'm appreciating this with you. I think of our relationship as a series of follow-up questions, by the way. You know, and sometimes they're 6 months apart or 9 months apart or 2 weeks apart. And sometimes that's email, and sometimes it's, hey, wanna get on a Zoom call together?
Mm.
I'm appreciating that with you. If people want to be in touch with you or be further curious with you, how would they do that?
I think the easiest to get in touch is via LinkedIn.
Mm.
So I'm an open book on LinkedIn.
Mm.
Very active and reactive. So feel free to connect. And otherwise, my website is workshops.work.
Yeah.
Which is less active and reactive, maybe.
Yeah. Miriam, I'm going to say thank you in the spirit of some closing words here, and then we'll pause the recording. And I think I've shared with you, after you and I have said an offline goodbye, I'll come back on and offer a few continued reflections about you and with you. But one of the things that I would offer as an appreciation now for this little space, me and my 8 o'clock-ish in the morning, well, coming up on 9 o'clock now in the morning where I live in Utah in the United States, you in Amsterdam, I think you're coming up on 5 o'clock now. Is that right? I feel that you have a gracious way of learning. And maybe that's another thread also, a gracious and generous way of learning. There is a particular spirit of invitation that I have experienced with you. And it does have some playfulness in it and open-heartedness in it. And yet it's also like super purposeful. And I, when those come together, I really love it. But I think that the headline that I would want to kind of bow into our center here is, yeah, you have a gracious way of learning, and it seems to bring some aliveness. I experienced that aliveness. I'm really grateful for our time together today. Any closing words that you would like to just share?
I feel very touched
by
your words. Feel seen. So thank you for that. I think I haven't seen myself in that way, so I appreciate that. And I love being in conversation with you. There's always, it feels like I can just slow down a little bit and dig a little bit deeper than usually and be a little bit more human. And that's a talent you have, setting the ground, and it comes so natural to you that I wonder whether you're actually aware of your talent and don't take it for granted. That by the way you invite into a conversation, the way you listen, and then always take something from an earlier part of the conversation and bring it in and weave it in. Like, oh, let's bring this color in and this. And then you weave these beautiful patterns with your questions and your comments. Thank you.
I receive that in my heart also. Thank you. I'll pause the recording for a moment. So Tennyson, returning here, whenever I go offline to say that little goodbye, the unrecorded part with the guest of the day, there's always something really moving in it to me. And this is true today with Miriam. I come back a bit just moved, I guess, deeply moved by the magic of friendship and colleagueship. What a thing to be able to develop pattern of both holding space together and following curiosity together. And Miriam is one of those people. I'm glad to know her that way. She spoke some of it in the podcast in her skilled way. You know, it's just like, I think we're just trying to be a little bit more human with one another. And if we've been able to be a little bit more human with one another, then perhaps something good and important has happened. I love her line of we're all facilitators, and maybe ranging and following our gut instincts to reading out of good books and coming up with good ideas and good exercises. But her emphasis on the heart of it is how I was hearing it, or the meta of it, as she described. You know, that's some powerful learning over the years. And I relate to that kind of learning also. I relate to trying to be mechanically good with the exercises I use. But yes, good. You know, it matters to know the bones of the things that we're doing and have some skill. It also matters to just come in with joy and heart and purpose. I think there is something about grounding all of that in some deeply nuanced and appreciated way of doing good things with one another on this time that we have as humans on the planet. Those are narratives that come alive for me in reconnecting with Miriam. So glad for her presence, glad for the shared presence that we got to have together. And she was a person, by the way, that I don't have some long list of folks that are already queued up for podcasts. I really love feeling it more closer to the moment. And I think with Miriam, it was because she had sent out an email, and I'm a glad person to be connected into her work and sharing a little bit of that also. And it was just the intuition kind of flash for me that said, oh gosh, Miriam, wouldn't that be fun? That really feeds into an appreciation that I have for such good folks, friends, colleagues, etc., that I love being in conversation with. So I hope there's something that comes out of this little conversation that Miriam and I had that maybe sparks a yes or an imagination or a next little thing for you also. This podcast, Human to Human, thanks for listening in again. And as always, thanks for shares and forwards as inspired in whatever the platforms you find yourself using. My website is tennysonwolf.com. Yep, please come explore. That's where I blog, and I use it really as a place to put out some things for sharing into the world. I'm glad for kinship with those of you who are listening. And if you're listening anew, great. There are so many narratives, I think, that bring us together and are needed to in these days to bring us together in honest and heartfelt ways. And I'm gushing now because I'm just riding that feeling of doing that with Miriam, and not too long ago with another friend in previous episode, Chris Corrigan. Thanks for joining today. Wishing you a good day.